Right now, we're talking about like just because you went to U of A and then I went to Arizona State. So we kind of have like a similar kind of experience in that as far as going to, I feel like Tucson and Arizona are kind of similar demographics, I would say. Definitely a lot more white people than like we're used to.
Yeah.
That for me was definitely like a little bit of a culture shock, bro, because like you don't realize, like, because you grow up in the Northeast, you go to Andrus, you don't realize like it's different. Because like that's all you're used to, you know? You're just used to growing up with like just obviously Hispanics, blacks. Obviously there's white people too, but not as many. And then you just go to Arizona and it's just like totally different, bro. Even just like the interactions you have and like you just kind of have to, you definitely have to adjust in a way, I would say. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. I mean, we went to the same high school, bro. So it
Yeah.
was mainly Hispanics and blacks. And that's kind of where I grew up. I mean, so when I got recruited and I went to U of A for football, I mean, I had guys coming in from all the West Coast. You had California, really, really big in California recruiting. So for my teammates, then you had like the South, like Louisiana, you had guys from Alabama. And we weren't really, I mean, even I'm pretty sure the South had, had a lot of whites. But we come over here and we're sitting here like, oh shoot, like, we just, it was kind of a culture shock because Arizona U of A is big on bringing out of ki kids out of country too. So first day I'm there, I remember this girl, blue eyes, brunette, and she's just like, oh, can you help me find a class, but in some crazy accent. And I looked at her and I was just like, what the hell? I don't even know what you said, but going out there, bro, I absolutely fell in love with it. I mean, after the first year, I remember, hope my girlfriend doesn't get mad, but I remember we were like, oh, we're not gonna date any white girls. We didn't really like white. We were all used to Mexicans and
Black
mixed black
girls.
girls, black girls, like, and so. Man, all of us ended up dating white girls after our freshman year. We all the whole team was dating white girls, and I started laughing. I was like, but it wasn't just, yeah, they were pretty girls, but also the culture with them. I never really got to experience the culture on their side.
It's just a different vibe. Like, I don't know, at least from my experience, like, just it's not bad either. It's just different, like, just interacting, the interaction, and just you guys come from different backgrounds, and it's just like it's totally different. I found myself actually hanging out like a lot more with really like the same thing, Hispanics and blacks. Like, it was kind of weird, not weird, because it's just I was so used to it, obviously, like, I had white friends, but I was just, I guess that was like my comfort zone, and like I just naturally just kind of like flocked in with those, like those people, But I mean, yeah, it seemed when you were out there, bro, like you were really thriving out there, so that's good that you enjoyed it. But yeah, so I'm sitting down with Tristan Cooper. This is episode 59 of The Most Vulnerable Player.
Sheesh.
Yeah, man, me and Tristan's, we've known each other for a good minute. I mean, obviously we went to the same high school. Andrews, I think you went to Nolan, right, too?
Yeah, I went to Nolan.
Okay. Yeah, I did
'Cause
too.
you're 2 years
2 years younger.
younger.
So I guess when you were in 8th grade, I was in 6th. And then yeah, did you go, what elementary did you go to?
Barone.
Barone. Okay, I went to Nixon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just remember you're tall as shit, bro. That's all I
Yeah.
remember.
Facts, yeah. But yeah, man, so we both grew up in the Northeast. Obviously we have like a lot of the same friends, mutual friends. We know a lot of the same people. So yeah, man, what was like your childhood? Like, obviously you played sports. You grew up with siblings. So just kind of tell me about like your upbringing, like your relationship with your parents and stuff like that.
That's an interesting. So, growing up, my dad was more of a coach. I've always looked at him more as a coach. He was very, very hard, bro. I mean, I sit here now and I look at my little brother Elijah. I don't know if you've met him or
I haven't met Elijah
no
yet, no.
discipline. No. He doesn't even. Oh my! He talks back. He does what he wants. He gets $200 presents. I'm sitting here like. Oh, you would have never lasted. You would have never lasted. Like, so, I mean, kind of growing up was a lot of hard work, a lot of structure, and a lot of discipline. That's how my dad structured us all.
For sure.
So,
And I remember, yeah, because I didn't play for him, but like for the All-Star game, I remember he coached us. So I remember like your dad just like super, it seemed like super serious dude, like didn't play about shit. So yeah, man, did he like, because obviously he played football as well, right?
Yeah, he played in North Texas.
Oh shit, okay. Did he go to Andrews as well?
He went to Coronado.
Oh wow.
And I think he ended up going to Andrews because he got kicked out for like fighting or something.
Oh
But
shit, okay.
yeah.
And was football always like in your path? Like, is it something you wanted to, or like he just kind of, he surrounded you with that and just kind of, not that he made you, but did he push you in that direction or you felt like you wanted to?
I absolutely hated football. Really? I hated football. I remember the first day he took me out. I was like, shh. I mean, I played flag football, you know, when I was like 5 years old. Football started when I was like about five years old, every day working out on the weekends. We go to the park, drills. But I remember the first day he took me to full pads and they put that helmet, those old ugly helmets we had back then. And I started crying. I said, Dad, this shit hurts. Like my head hurts. Like, so it's, but he was like, no, you're not quitting. Like there's absolutely, there's nothing you're going to tell me or say that's going to make me, you know, make you quit. So
damn,
I got stuck with it.
Mm-hmm. And, did you kind of grow? So you play basketball as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you say football was your favorite sport growing up, or did you enjoy basketball, or how was that for you?
Basketball was more fun for me.
Okay.
Because football was so serious to me, like so serious to my dad. So I had to be the best at all times. Mm-hmm. Basketball, I can go out there and just, you know, have fun. And my dad, good job.
Yeah.
But football was, that's when all the jokes were put aside. That's where everything, and obviously it's a little more dangerous too. You can't just go out there and just, you can get hit.
Yeah, for sure. And you were working out for football, like you were training, you were doing all the extra shit, you know?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And so, yeah, you go to Nolan, end up going to Andrus. What would you say, did you know that you were going to, I mean, obviously I don't think anybody knows, but obviously was a goal to play in college, especially like in football?
You know, I remember growing up, I don't think I even thought that big until I got to high school. And it was just because it was nothing really. I mean, my dad played at North Texas, but just for a short time. So it was nothing. I mean, I didn't have any family members that were that played college ball in the league. So I kind of went going as, I really looked at it as, let's just play every day. I mean, let's go out there, do the best as I possibly can. Not until high school. That's when I started watching videos and watching Oregon. This is when I was a big Oregon Ducks fan, and I'd watch all the highlights. And then I started sitting there, and I was just like, oh, shoot, like, could it be me? I mean, I've never heard of El Paso getting D1, really D1 players and going to these big Power Fives until it was me. Mm-hmm. And I sat there, and I was like, oh, shit. Like, it kind of hits you right at once. And he's like, my coach calls me, Tristan, you have an offer from Arizona. Boom, you have another offer from Texas Tech. Boom, you have another offer. I was like, whoa, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
so it finally became like a reality for you. And so I'm curious on your perspective, bro, because you played your first 3 years under Coach Brown, right?
Yeah.
And that staff. And then Coach Wood came in, and that was like my sophomore year, but I played my freshman year under Coach Brown. What do you feel like was the difference between those you playing under Coach Brown and then Coach Wood? Like, what was the difference for you?
Two completely different coaches.
Yeah.
Both have their pros. Mm-hmm. Coach Brown, and I tell Coach Brown, Coach Mack, Coach Macias, all of them, they instilled in me what my dad already, I mean, engraved in me since I was young.
Yeah.
Discipline, hard work, passion, everything for it. They were so hard. You played with them. They're crazy. I'd wrestle Coach Mack, Coach Macias, all of them. Like, it was, and it was just more, I kind of looked at them more as father figures. So I was like, oh, shoot, like this is like just amplified just with my dad has been always telling me. And then they ended up leaving my junior year.
Yeah. How'd you feel about that? Were you kind of like upset or?
I was very, very confused.
Yeah.
I was so emotionally confused. I was hurt. I remember I cried. I remember I was mad. I remember I went into Coach Brown's office and just kind of vented to him and said how mad and disappointed I was in them, because how would you do this to me on my senior year when you knew I had to be one of the most invested players.
Yeah, for sure.
Had to be. But then Coach Woodruff came. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, work ethic, discipline, that, you know, hard edge mentality, Coach Brown and that whole coaching staff instilled in me. Mm-hmm. But Coach Woodruff brought something that I don't think any coach in El Paso has right now. Mm-hmm. And he knew how to run a college program in a high school.
Yeah, exactly.
All the workouts, the practices, the meals even before the games, That's all you do in college.
Yeah.
So when I went to college, I was like, oh, okay, you guys have intervals of, okay, you go warm up with the DBs, you guys warm up as a team, you go into DB position, you know, go into position drills. None of that was ran through, you know, I don't even know. They probably do it now because they started picking it up. But back then it was, I mean, you just go out there, warm up, start practicing. I guess I don't even remember the practices, but that's what Coach Woodruff brought. He brought knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. So
an experience.
Yeah, it was totally. Yeah, I remember it was just like night and day. I feel like from my perspective, I agree. Like Coach Wood definitely brought a completely different dynamic, and you can definitely feel it was like, yeah, when he got there, it felt like it was a college program type. I mean, I never played in college, but like it from what I've seen, what I've like, just the way he approached it was like, all right, this is like business, you know, like. And so, yeah, it was just totally different, bro. I'm always curious though, like how different it would have been if like I was able to play, and even your last senior year, like if Coach Brown and them were still there, because I mean, it does definitely make an impact on like just a lot of things, chemistry, everything. Like you already know them, they know the players. So I feel like I'm curious to see if it would have been any different, you know.
I will say, I wouldn't change anything for sure, 100%. But I just know Woodruff had the connections that I'm pretty sure 100% of El Paso coaches don't have.
Yeah.
So that was the thing. You know, he brought in probably 10 offers within 1 year for me. So
did you have any your junior year?
Going in, I think, I don't even think I had an offer from UTEP.
Damn.
Like it was, yeah. The love from UTEP was not there. So I don't understand. But yeah, I don't think I had, I may have had one offer that came in, like I think from like Illinois, like going into that transition period between Brown and Woodruff. But for the most part, it's just all about who you know.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. He definitely had the connections. And yeah, I remember like even your recruiting process. I remember like there is, what would you say in your perspective would like set you apart? Obviously you played DB. I'm sure you played a little bit of offense. Like, when did you stop playing offense? Like your junior year?
I stopped playing offense my sophomore year. And then I started playing again my senior year.
Oh, that's right. You did.
Sophomore, junior year, it was just strictly defense.
Yeah. What would you say? And even just through your recruiting process, what like was your strength and what do you feel like got you those offers and got you recruited? What were they looking at and be like, damn, like we need this kid.
I was very aggressive. I always tell my Jermaine Elijah, I would have killed you. I was a big hitter. That was the thing. Like, interceptions, I would get them. But, you know, for the most part, my high school, if you ever look up my high school highlights, I was going over with Elijah's. And I was like, oh, Elijah, you kind of look like me. Like, you guys, like, with some of the hits. But I was huge. And my whole biggest thing was your first impression has to be the best. Mm-hmm. So my first 3, 4, 5 clips, that's how Woodruff would always teach me, has to be, oh shit, we got to keep watching this film. Mm-hmm. Who is this kid? So that was my biggest thing was, all right, let me do something that the majority of, you know, safeties, DBs don't do. Everybody can go in and get an interception. You just got to go catch a ball.
Yeah.
But not everybody can hit. Exactly. So that was my biggest thing.
Yeah. And I remember specifically one play, bro, that I like remember, like this, what I remember is I remember you had a play where you like chased down some motherfucker from like, I think, I don't know if they like blocked a punt or blocked a field goal. Yeah. And bro, you literally came from across the field and like just hawked him down. I was like, damn, like that play, I feel like just alone just shows like, damn, this motherfucker, like just like, yeah, your hustle on that play was, I feel like that play was insane. You know, like I'm sure that even opened a lot of eyes.
Just it's that. That gassed me for sure. But 100% was for the team.
Yeah.
Did I care about those 2 points? Hell no. But I knew it would have definitely, you got to, especially when you play team sport, you have to think about the team. So you go out there and you say, shit, do I really want to run 100 yards or go track this guy down? No.
Yeah.
For 2 points? No. We would have still won. But you have to do what you have to do for the team. For
sure. Oh, yeah. And what's like the, from Jermaine and Elijah, like what similarities do you see? And then what, like, how do their games differ from yours?
I always think the younger siblings are more athletic. Hannah's more athletic than me. She's a hooper. Mm-hmm. Jeremiah, then it goes to Jeremiah. He is more athletic than me, better in coverage, has better ball skills than I do. I will say none of them are better hitters than me, or better tackling, but they will, and then same thing with Elijah. I just think them, my whole role as the older brother was to show them that, hey, this is possible.
Yeah.
I mean, me growing up, I didn't know if it was possible or not. I'd never seen it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know if I was going to make it to college. I didn't know if I was going to make it to the league because I've never seen it. That wasn't part of what I was growing up in. But now them, I just wanted to say, like, hey, if I could do it and I'm not as athletic as you guys are, well, then imagine what you guys can do. Mm. So them being more athletic, being versatile. I mean, Jeremiah ran track, basketball, same thing with Elijah. And then my sister's just a freak of nature too. Yeah. So I sit there and I'm like, guys, like my sister's overseas hooping. And I told her, I said, I mean, at the end of the day, I just kind of look at it like all the hard work, people don't really understand. Mm-hmm. You think you understand. People think they understand what it takes, but they don't. And I mm-hmm. said, all the hard work is not going to go unseen. So my sister going hooping in Germany, Jeremiah playing at Iowa State, balling out, you know, Elijah, you know, he's balling right now. He's going to be a junior next year at Andrews. I kind of look at them all and I'm like, man, the endless potential, if you stay disciplined mm-hmm. is insane.
Yeah, for sure. Damn, bro. Yeah. I mean, you definitely paved the way for them. And even just like, not even just your siblings, just so passed on in general, even the Northeast. Like, I feel like once, like, obviously it was multiple people that maybe had gotten offers, but even just you getting that U of A offer was big. I feel big for a lot of El Paso athletes, you know? So that's definitely, so what made you, so obviously you had different offers. What made you choose U of A?
I think, for one, a big thing in El Paso, everyone in El Paso knows, everyone's very close to their family in El Paso. Mm-hmm. So yes. I didn't want to go all the way to, I mean, Lubbock's not far. It's only six and a half hours away. It's not that bad. West Virginia's pretty far. You go to all these other Big Ten schools that, you know, Purdue, Illinois, that I was sitting there just like, damn, when am I ever going to see my family? So biggest thing was location.
Yeah.
Second biggest thing was obviously conference. Pac-12, I wanted to play in the Pac-12. I felt like that was a good conference for me to thrive in. And then third thing I would say, and it goes kind of with the first thing, is family. I mean, I just wanted to make sure that my family could go to every home game.
And did you visit the schools that you were being recruited by?
Yeah, and then also the visit was insane. So the partying, the atmosphere, yeah, there's really nothing like it.
Do you have any, like, kind of wild stories that you're able to share, like, about the visit? Or just things that, like, were pretty interesting or pretty dope?
I would say, I mean, I'm going to try to keep it as PG as possible. Yeah. I told Jeremiah, because Jeremiah came back for spring break, and I said, bro, we got to go to Tucson. And so I took him to Tucson for spring break, me, him, and his best friend, and then one of my friends flew in town. And I was like, bro, it's a different atmosphere. The frats, the sororities, like, but I would say, for the most part, me and my roommates, when we were there, we lived as much as we possibly could to the fullest mm-hmm. with football, the parties. I mean, even the coaches. I'll tell you some of how crazy U of A was. You had the coaches. I hope this doesn't ever go like crazy viral, but you had the coaches that would party with us.
Wow.
You had the coaches messing with the same girls as us. It was insane. It was wicked. I can't go into detail on everything, but sure, yeah. It was the party atmosphere is nothing like anybody's seen
compare
in here in this entire city. Like, you'd have to go, and it was also a college town. There's no adults.
Yeah,
everybody goes there to retire, and they all live in the mountains. Mm-hmm. So nobody's around. I mean, I've seen maybe 2-3 cops. They're never driving around campus. And then you had, man, everything was connected, that campus. So you had the dorms, the sororities, the football field, all walking distance of each other, the classes. Yeah, you can imagine how messy that gets.
Facts. So. Damn, bro. Yeah, that's, I feel like U of A is like, and ASU, I feel like those are like two, like, if you think of a college in movies, like that's a good example, you know?
Oh.
So yeah, so you end up going to U of A, Tucson. What was that? I mean, you talked about a little bit, like Coach Rodolph kind of instilled that college aspect to high school. So you're kind of a little bit used to it. But what was like the biggest adjustment for you going into playing Division I football?
Oh man, the speed, the strength, and your mental strength. You're mentally to pick up the playbook as fast as, and I didn't redshirt, so I was just thrown in there with the Wolves. To pick up the playbook, you think you're smart until you really get around all these smart defensive coordinators, position coaches that know the game. You think you know the game until you really go with somebody that knows the game. And you're like, oh my goodness, I don't even know shit. Like, you sit here and you start diagnosing everything. And I think, obviously, you got to get in the weight room. The weight room was, I was strong, but man, it didn't make, I remember my first game, I got ran over, and I haven't been ran over in like 3 years. And I sat there, I said, what the hell? But strength, speed, and then, obviously, just your mentality, your whole mental, your knowledge on the game, like, it's that much fat. You're playing against Oregon. You're playing against USC. You're playing against these. California was loaded with athletes.
Yeah.
And then you had Oregon. You had Washington. Good luck.
Mm-hmm. Did you know you were going to play your freshman year?
Hell no. I remember I would call my dad every day. And I was, I'm like, bro, I don't know this playbook. I don't even know what I'm doing. And then I remember I went out there one day in practice. And I was like a third stringer, like going into to fall camp. And they put me out there. I go out there and I just, I don't know where. I just ran to wherever. We're running 7-on-7. I picked the ball off the first string quarterback and I ran it for a touchdown. I'm just like, I don't even know what I was supposed to do. Like, I just ran out there. Yeah. Like, I didn't even know. And ever since then, boom, they jumped me up to first string.
Damn.
I didn't know what the hell I did either. But for some reason, being first string made me pay more attention and, I don't know, just made me smarter. I don't know. I just went out there and figured out the playbook.
So, yeah. So, like, was it just confusing for you? Or was it just like you felt like, oh, shit, I really have a chance to play. So, I'm just like, all right, I got to
flip
that switch.
It was more confusing. And in every athlete knows, you go out there and play timid, you can't play your best.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going out there second thinking and, you know, double thinking yourself, you're not going to play. You're not going to play how you usually play. And so in that, at that level, the playbook changes every week. Every week is a different scheme. And it's just different variation of a scheme you've already learned. So if you haven't picked up that original scheme, well, good luck picking up a different variation and then a different variation.
Yeah.
So the same scheme for USC is not the same scheme for Oregon. The same scheme for Oregon is not the same scheme for Washington.
Yeah.
So that's where mentally it's so fast. And it happens within a week.
Mm-hmm.
You got to pick up the scheme within a couple of days, and then you go out there and play full speed. If you can't play full speed, you're not going to play.
Yeah. And how are you managing, like, your schoolwork and then the, like, the fucking studying of the entire playbook, you know?
That was so the cool thing is at U of A, and usually at the majority of these Power 5, Power 4 conferences, are you have these, what I call them, like, study, what do you call them? Where you go,
study hall?
Study halls, okay. Yes, where you have these tutors, these personal tutors that you come in at a certain time. They help you out with everything. That absolutely saved me. Mm. My freshman, sophomore, it helps with scheduling. It helps with getting my work done. You know, so you're going to go back to the dorm and you're probably not going to work. You're probably going to, you know, text somebody go party with somebody. So mandatory study hall was something that they mandated to all of us,
mm-hmm.
So especially as underclassmen. So it helped us structure.
Yeah. So you're able to get like most of your work done. And did a lot of teachers, do they work with athletes a lot? Like they know that you're.
Some were fans, but then the others that didn't care and didn't watch, you know, play football or anything like that. Well, good luck. They're just a regular student. So, but for the majority of teachers, like, they knew. And they'd always say, oh, Tristan, like, good game. Or so it was a really cool experience. But for the most part, it was going to be your work. You better get all your work done in study hall because that's where the most, that's your designated hour to 2 hours of homework. And then everything else is football.
Yeah. Fuck, dude. Yeah, it's like a full-time. I mean, it's a full-time job for sure.
100%. Oh, 100%.
Yeah. And what was your first game like? Who was it against? And how do you remember, like, were you there from the first play or you had gotten inserted in? Like, how did, just give me your first game.
No, I was absolutely subbed in.
Okay.
I was subbed in because the person in front of me was making some errors and he was a upperclassman. And it was either, goodness, to think back that far, it was either against Grambling State, which is a HBCU,
mm-hmm.
and they're usually very athletic.
Yeah.
And then, or Hawaii. So it was one of those two. So it wasn't a crazy game, which was great to get my feet wet.
Yeah.
But I think the first game I started was against Washington when they were ranked.
Oh, shit.
Those guys are so big and strong. All Samoans. But
damn.
That was
Was it in Washington?
That one was at home. It was at home, and this is when I was on my high horse too, because I was balling out as a true freshman, and then they started me against Washington, and then I lose the game for them.
What? For real?
In overtime, I believe. It was either overtime or fourth quarter. I lost the it was a mental mistake.
Yeah.
And that was something my coach looked at me so disappointed, and I remember his face, and I sat there and I was just like, there's no excuses. Yeah, I'm a freshman, but at the end of the day, you go out there and you produce or you don't produce.
Yeah.
And there is no, you got people's jobs on the line, you have people's families, foods on the table. So I sat there and I was so disappointed in myself. I was so sad. I wanted to say any excuse possible to make it better. But I learned from that day on, excuses are just a reason on why you fail. There's nothing to benefit off of saying an excuse. Nothing. You can tell yourself that, oh, it's because some, but you know deep down inside it was your fault.
Yeah. What was the play?
Bro, it's because Washington, they shift in motion so much. And that's why I say it schematically, different variations, you have to pick it up fast. Well, they motion. If you ever watched some of these teams play, they'll motion like 2-3 guys before the play even happens. And I guess my guy motioned out, and the safety's supposed to come drop down, and I'm supposed to go to the post. Well, I didn't go to the post. So they scored a touchdown, and I was just sitting there like, damn, well, oh, that sucks. Yeah. So,
damn, and as a true freshman experiencing that, especially one of your first games, how do you, like, obviously you're telling yourself there's no excuse, but what is your mindset after that, and how are you kind of, like, dealing with that, and are you, like, were you just immediately, all right, let's go, or was it, like, did it kind of fuck with you for a little bit?
Oh, it definitely messed with me, because I definitely lost my starting position out of that game. Shit, but, yeah. I mean, freshman year was, like, I had my highs, I had my lows, but I learned a lot. Mm. And with that, mentally, that's the thing. There is no time to have a pity party and pout, and it's just, all right, get ready for the next week. We got USC. Mm. So that's why I kind of sit here and mentally, you know, I told myself after the game, I said, Tristan, for you to make a mental error is insane. Like, that is definitely not like you. Physical error, okay, that's different. You know, you just get your ass ran over.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm only a buck 70, buck 80. Like, it is what it is. But mentally, I was like, come on, man. Like, there's absolutely no way. You're so consistent with the mental game. I believe your hardest critic should be yourself. Mm-hmm. So all I did from there, I for me to make mental errors was so rare, because I knew I wasn't the most athletic. Mm-hmm. But mentally, I knew if I can grasp the game, I'd be able to play as if I'm as athletic as some of these guys.
For sure. Yeah, and what was your progression like over time? So from soft, like, where did you see the biggest jump for yourself as far as just the knowledge and then the just you kind of picking up the game and you kind of feeling, getting your feet, like, just set, you know?
I think sophomore to junior, because freshman year was getting your feet wet. Mm-hmm. Sophomore year is, okay, putting on a little bit of weight. You've been here for a year, you know, adapting to the speed. You already know the playbooks and everything like that. But junior year is where you're just like, all right, let's turn it up a notch. You got to take it to another level. You can't play every year. Yeah, you play good your freshman year. You play good your sophomore year. That's not how it works. You got to turn it up a notch, or they're going to replace you either way.
Damn.
So you can play good. You can play good freshman, sophomore, junior year. You can play good senior year. They'll still replace you, because you have to bring something to the table that is better than last year.
Yeah. You can't just stay stagnant.
Oh, no. It doesn't matter. You go back in. If you're just making tackles or making pass deflections or making one interception, no, you got to turn it up a notch.
Yeah. Damn, bro. I mean, that's – and do you feel – is it a known pressure of, like, when you're playing that in D1, like, you know, your job's on the line all the time. Like, anybody can kind of replace you, you know? It's always next man up.
Yes, I would definitely say that. And it is – if you think you're going to get content, wait till National Signing Day happens. Mm. You sit there and you're just like, who did they pick up? You have a 4- or 5-star recruit coming in that has fresh legs?
Yeah.
Man, even as an upperclassman, you're sitting there and you tell your coach, you're like, I don't have the fresh legs as some of these freshmen have. And if we're going to try to compete, these freshmen may win because they got fresh legs. They're ready. They're 18, 19 years old. compared to somebody that's been in the game for 3-4 years that's been just, oh man, going through the whole freaking 4 years of just, we call it indentured servants, but yeah, that whole process is rough. Yeah. So,
and did you have anybody like bring you under their wing, maybe even like someone at your position or someone similar, or was it just like complete competition?
I did, yeah. And you eventually will. I brought people, even when I was an upperclassman, I'd bring the underclassmen under my wing too and teach them, because at the end of the day, you all need each other.
Yeah.
Whether or not, because I remember my upperclassman, when he was tired or when he would get hurt, I'd have to go in. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't prepared, he'd have to stay in. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that sucks. Yeah. So same thing with me. I would tap my helmet too if I'm tired or gassed, because I'm not trying to be on the big screen getting scored on. So that was my whole thing, is yeah, you got to coach them up. You got to teach them, because you do know, you know, eventually when your time's done, they have to take your, they would definitely take your spot. For so, sure. But yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. And as far as like the outside of football goes, like just with the social life and everything, like, what is it like being a D1 athlete, like on campus, bro, especially the football team? Like, I mean, you guys are them, you know, on the campus.
I would say, bro, I say this, like, and I hope, I would love for a lot of like high school students to watch, just cause, or high school athletes to watch, just cause it is such an experience. But it was more so after the game, you know, you go check your phone, you go and look at notifications. I'm talking about, you're going to see just, and this is when social media wasn't as big.
Yeah.
I can imagine now, but you'll see probably about 50 notifications of family members, friends, people from, you know, your locals, just, you know, text you, oh, great game. Then you go to Instagram. You go to Instagram and it's a whole different world. You got people sending, you got probably a list full of girls that either requested just to follow you, followed you, messaged you, sent you videos of you on the game, like, and it was endless.
Yeah.
So then you're walking campus and it's pretty cool if you're that guy, like, in it, and there was a couple of those guys on our campus. I mean, everybody knows you. Mm-hmm. So the they're gonna watch every single move you make. And it's way different. You're not walking around like you're nobody. You have to. You're walking around as somebody. So it's a little different. You have to move different. You have to talk different. You have to. They're just gonna see everything you do, yeah. Good and bad.
It's a lot of distraction. It could be a lot of distraction, huh?
Oh, it is a lot of distraction. A lot of distraction. But yeah. It was fun.
yeah, bro. And like, did you kind of? I'm curious. Did you have people like that didn't really hit you up, and then like all of a sudden like. You over here like doing well at college, and you're just like, oh shit, that's kind of random. Do you get that?
I did.
Yeah.
And I see it even a lot with my siblings. Mm-hmm. And since I've been through it, and I was so young and new to it, I will say I probably did get taken advantage at times. Mm-hmm. And so now me knowing that, I see it with my siblings, and I'm very, very protective. And I don't know if you really knew me. How I was at Andrews, but I was very protective. My sister was there, so there's some stories that you know, that I was a very protective person over my siblings, and so now I see it now, and I see people that creep in and come out of the woodworks out of nowhere and try to even talk to me to get to them, and I sit there, I'm like, bro, you're talking to the wrong guy. I play your game 10 times better than you play your game. So, like, I know what you're doing, because I've been through it. I've been, you know, I've seen people come and go. Mm-hmm. And my biggest thing is, you know, I tell Jeremiah, I tell my sister, I tell Hannah, like, I mean, my Elijah too. You know, the identity switch has to be the hardest thing any athlete will go through. Mm-hmm. It's different. Everybody knows you. Like, what have we talked about for the past 10 minutes? Football.
Yeah.
What do I do now? It's way different. Yeah. So that whole identity switch, everybody knew, oh, Tristan Cooper, the football player. I said, Jeremiah, I mean, all you guys, whether you make it or not, the people that have been with you will stay with you. Mm-hmm. The people that are coming out of nowhere because you're hot right now and, oh, you're this player, you got this, you're starting at Andrews, you know, you're in Germany hooping. Wait till you switch. Mm-hmm. We'll see if they're there.
Yeah.
And I already know. And you have not just randoms, but you have family that comes in. Mm. You have everybody. And I sit there, I'm just like, I kind of just laugh. But, you know, I just tell them, you know, just don't expect so much out of them.
Yeah.
If things go south.
Yeah. Damn, that's an amazing point you made. And yeah, because, I mean, you eventually, I mean, yeah, definitely want getting to that. But yeah, you made a completely different life for yourself outside of football that is, seems like that you're doing like very well. And that is amazing because a lot of people struggle with that. I know a lot of athletes do. And yeah, so getting into that just before, like, did you have aspirations to play pro? Or what was that like? What was your mentality like?
So that is something I have barely voiced to probably my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I voiced it to her because she was going to Germany and she was going out of the country and she didn't know if she was ready. And I said, Hannah, you have to look at it as best case scenario and worst case scenario. Worst case scenario, you don't ever play basketball again.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. And that was your whole identity. You playing, hooping, Hannah Cooper, the basketball player. Best case scenario, well, you get picked up next year. You get to hang out with your friends in El Paso for a whole year. You know, keep working out, and then you know another team picks you up,
mm-hmm.
and you can. That's best case scenario.
Yeah.
But if you base it off best case scenario, you're an idiot. So my whole thing was, and I said, Hannah, if there was one thing that I wish I could go back and change, because I'm very big on, I wouldn't change anything. I don't give any excuses. But I wish I would have had my opportunity and COVID didn't cancel it.
Mm.
COVID canceled. And COVID canceled my pro day, the combines, the private workouts, the 52-man roster. It's only 52-man.
Mm-hmm.
They canceled everything. So I had a bunch of teams and I sit there and I'm just like, that is one thing I don't think I will ever be able to get over because it was something I worked for my entire life and never got.
Mm.
And that sucks. There's people out there like that. So
yeah.
That was my dreams and aspirations were 100% to go to the league.
Mm-hmm.
Did they happen? No, it was the Lord's will. I'm pretty sure he doesn't make any mistakes.
Yeah.
So I will say, you know, I've moved on, but I don't think I'll ever forget.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody will ever forget.
For sure.
So
yeah, because I was asking Rob, I was like, bro, I mean, I didn't know exactly what the story was, but I know you had all the talent, all the skill and knowledge to be able to play at the next level. And he was saying, yeah, I mean, COVID is literally like your pro day. And so like, what, like, obviously it went, there's a huge pandemic, but like there was a pro day supposed to have happened and they just canceled it because of COVID. It was like during the hot season of COVID, or how did that,
you know, out? I was training with Rob and Joseph, both of them crazy guys. I was training with them for like 3 years.
Yeah, Rob said he was going to call in and ask you some questions right now.
Nah, hell no. Nah. But I was training with them for three years. And I remember, I think it was the last week before we were supposed to go up for Arizona Pro Day.
Mm-hmm.
So
you were Rob back in El Paso for a little bit.
Yeah, because I was doing my training over here with Rob, and we're running, you know, 40s, everything like that. And, you know, our last workout we ever did, I remember Rob clocked me. It was fast to me, but it was like, mm-hmm. at a 5.5, like a 5.56 or something like that. I mean, a 4.56 like that. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's a phenomenal time. I was so excited. Like, and I was like, I just gave Rob a big hug. I said, oh yeah, bro, it's a wrap. If I run this, like, it's a wrap.
Yeah.
2 days before I was going to arrive.
And this was 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They called me. They say, Tristan, what? Like, Arizona calls and said, there's no more pro day. And I said, okay, well, when are you guys going to reschedule it? There is no reschedule.
What the fuck?
Oh, my goodness. My heart just dropped, and I sat there, and I remember I went back to my house, and I just laid there. I was so depressed for, like, I don't even know how long. And then draft day comes, and I remember, oh, my goodness, this is the worst feeling I've ever had. But draft day comes, and my agent, I had Dallas. I was talking to Dallas, Detroit, the Rams, the Chargers. I remember Dallas called me. I hate Dallas too, but I was like, I'll go play for Dallas. They called me like, yeah, oh, we love you. Can't wait to get you down. Like, yada, yada, yada. And I remember, boom, like my agent came down. No pro day, no in-person workout. So all of those texts slowly went away.
Yeah, and there was no alternative at all. Like, they didn't offer like, yo, all right, at some point we're going to be able to, or you had just had to wait a while for that to happen.
So this is where I'm going to say excuses. Okay. So, and this is where I say, you know, Tristan, maybe you just didn't want it enough. Mm-hmm. But going into that, I remember the draft day came up. Mm-hmm. And the last team that was talking to my agent saying, we're going to take him. Mm. As an undrafted free agent, but we're going to take him. Was it Detroit or was it Seahawks? It was one of the teams. I forgot. And he calls my agent and he was like, hey, my agent was so excited. We're going to take the safety from Cal instead. And I sat there. And I was just like, this guy sucks. What the heck? I was like, what the heck? I was so hurt hearing that, though. And I was just like, what?
Yeah.
I didn't even know what to say. Like, what could you say? And I just asked him and I follow up my agent. Like, anybody. Nothing. But, later, I mean, a whole year later, they're like, oh, you know, the seniors that were the COVID seniors can come participate at the pro day at Arizona. And I sat there and I was just like, okay, well, I'll train and I'll go to that one. But this is where I say, Tristan, like, if you really wanted to go to the NFL, maybe you could have. I remember UTEP had their pro day a week before mine mm-hmm. at Arizona. And they asked, do you want to participate? I said, no. Mm. And I was like, okay, well, there's my opportunity right there, Tristan. What was something that you could have done better to maybe have got yourself to the league? Because I can say, oh, COVID this, COVID that. Well, then it all comes down to me, though.
Yeah.
I had my opportunity. I could have went to UTEP's pro day. Because you can go do that. Go to other people's pro day.
Gotcha.
And participate. And then I went, you know, to the year later. But even with that, I mean, you could even ask Rob. I was kind of just bullshitting those workouts. I went out there, did whatever. And I mean, I kind of already knew it was over. You had to compete with everybody else in that class as well. You fresh out of a season. I really just had very little hopes for that one. Mm-hmm. But those two opportunities were my key opportunities.
Yeah. And what was that like just kind of for you mentally, bro? Like, I'm sure it was pretty tough on you, like just playing football your entire life. And then, yeah, just all the bullshit that comes with, like, you not being able to participate in that pro day. And then you kind of, that doubt seeping in of, like, oh, damn, like, I might not be able to, I mean, make that a reality, you know? So how did that affect you?
I will say, and I tell people all the time, football had to be the hardest thing I've ever been through. Real estate, I see a lot of people struggling with real estate and complaining about real estate. This shit's easy. it's going to ruffle some feathers, but this shit, you dictate how much you make. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have anybody pulling your strings like a puppet.
Yeah.
You have politics you're dealing with in college. You have strict schedules. It's literally a job. And the thing is like the mental and physical demand and emotional demand in it too, mm-hmm. way harder than the job I'm doing right now. And the failure rate in real estate is like 80% or something like that.
Damn.
So I sit there and I'm just like, mentally, emotionally, physically, it was probably the hardest 4 years of my life, but the most exciting. Mm-hmm. And I learned the most about myself.
Yeah.
So adversity, everybody says, you know, oh, we got to go through adversity. People don't really talk about resiliency though. Mm-hmm. Like they said, oh, adversity hits. Like, yeah, but how you respond, everybody says how you respond. That is the thing. Mm-hmm. How you respond, I was so depressed for probably about 2 weeks, but then I said, well, Tristan, you got to move on. You got to figure it out now. Like, you're a big boy. Like, you mm-hmm. graduated. What are we going to do now? And I already kind of knew I wanted to do real estate, but I would say football prepared me mentally, physically, emotionally for the real world. I mean, absolutely. If I were to go through everything, all the bullshit I went through, politics is the biggest thing. You have to, oh my goodness.
When you talk politics, like, what do you, give me an example.
You have boosters involved that pay, that want to see kids on the field. You have head coaches involved. You have position coaches involved. You have fans involved. You have media involved. Those people that broadcast, if they don't know anything about you, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're only going to talk and hype up some of the players that they want to see go to the Knicks. Gotcha. So it's very interesting. I find it to be a very, very crooked business. That's why I'm glad they're paying the athletes now, because to go through all that shit, you got to get paid. Yeah. Like there's, you're getting your scholarships, but the thing is, football funds, for the majority, the power fours, football funds the school.
Yeah.
There's a,
for sure.
But there's a lot of bullshit. That's why I say you're really not in control. You just better make sure that the guy that is in control likes you. So that's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah. And so you ended up graduating with psychology, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Same. It was a little bit like that one for me, bro. I just kind of wanted to get my degree, honestly. So I was just ready.
I mean, even as a football player, everybody, it's either going to be communications or psychology. So it's going to be one of those two.
Yeah. And when did that like real estate kind of itch like start to come about? Like, where did you kind of learn about that a little bit? And what made you want to pursue that after?
I had a roommate whose mom was a real estate agent. She was married to his dad that played for the Green Bay Packers. That's my team still.
Yeah.
And she was a real estate agent for the NFL guys, for like, her husband's teammates and things like that. So I was like, oh shoot, okay, like, you know, with my platform that I had in football, I was like, well, I made some pretty cool connections. Whether they're here or not, when I'm done, I made some cool connections.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, why not be the real estate agent for these guys? And then also progressing, I said, well, if my siblings make it, I want to be able to make sure, like, I get all these people that come in. Oh, I want to, you know, do a business planning for your brother. And I said, all right, it's cool, bro. Well, we're going to throw it in real estate. So yeah. I just want to let you know. But, for the most part, a lot of my connections, even some of the guys I talk to now in Arizona, some are in the league, some are, you know, they'll ask me, how the hell, how are you buying these houses? Like, and then I tell them, and I'm just like, if you're ever in Texas, bro, I can make a flight to Dallas. I can make a flight to Houston, but it's just the connections.
Yeah.
And I said, real estate ain't going nowhere. Mm-hmm. So that was my biggest thing. And then also dictating how much, you know, how much money you want to make. Mm-hmm. You know, that was my biggest thing. I still, to this day, I improve on myself. So it's very hard. I criticize myself a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I think, just laying the foundation, you know, I gave my siblings hope to take it to the next level, but now laying the foundation on, okay, well, when you guys do get the money, now here's plan B, or here's step two. So
got you. Damn. Yeah. You're putting them on game, bro. I mean, that's kind of like the beauty of also, I mean, your path too, bro. I mean, the fact that you are able to set up like your siblings for, as much success or even maybe more success for you down the road. I mean, that's I feel like is super fulfilling, I would say. Or it seems like it would be, you know.
It is. And it's just because I wish I had somebody to hold my hand when I was going through all of this. But since, you know, you're the first one doing it, you're not going to have it. Mm-hmm. So now seeing them and seeing how the world works a little bit when you're up and when you're down, I think, the biggest thing for them is I just want to make sure, like I said, if and when the identity switch happens, and it doesn't even have to happen, but that I have something set for you. So don't think that it's all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just know that you are more than an athlete, a football player. Yeah, you may not get the publicity and, you know, the praise as you once did, but there is something else that you can do out there and you can flourish in.
Yeah. And so when you kind of go to that point where you're just like, you know what, I'm not really taking it serious anymore, I'm going to make that transition to real estate, something I've been wanting to do. What's your first move in just really going into it, you know, trying to, have success in real estate? What's the first thing you did?
First thing I did, and anybody, I mean, first that joins it, you have to join a group.
Mm.
Now, this is where I'm not going to say much and get into detail, but the group I joined were two dudes, and they're phenomenal, phenomenal mentors.
Mm-hmm.
These guys were so far ahead on some of these realtors that I see now, and I'm like, damn, like these guys were saying stuff when I first joined about 4 years ago. Phenomenal. I mean, they've taught me so much. they're terrible people. I'll say so that's the only thing. Phenomenal. I give them their praise. Oh, they were phenomenal mentors. They were the ones who created, you know, created everything on how I do everything in real estate. Mm-hmm. So great mentors. But
how'd you come across them? How'd you meet them?
A guy named Rob.
Oh shit! Okay.
So Rob comes. So yeah, it was a guy named Rob. But
fire.
Yeah, for the most part, bro.
Fucking Rob, bro. He's like the connections he makes. I don't know. Rob's a real one, bro. Like he really I don't know, bro. I give a lot of fucking praise to Rob because I don't know. I feel like he's definitely helped me out a lot as well. So.
You ever see Rob's real side, bro?
Bro,
when I was in college, that was Rob's real side.
I know, I'm jealous, bro. I never got to see like the Rob everybody talks about, you know, like
Joseph was crazy too. Yeah. That was the crazy him and yeah, they mellowed out and much of as I've mellowed out too, but yeah they
you told me you guys have some fucking stories, man.
Like, oh yeah, we have some stories that we'll take to the grave.
But, yeah, I was like, yeah, I don't think Tristan would want you to call in, bro.
Yeah, no, there's no point in that. But like I said, yeah, I had great mentors, and that was the biggest thing, joining a group, figuring it all out. Same thing, they're like coaches. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very easy. I was just being a student again. I was like, okay, well, I've done this, and if I'm my own boss, this is the easiest thing I've ever done.
Got you. And did you have money going into it? Like any sort of...
I saved funds? A lot from college. I saved a lot, and that's something I'm very good with.
Were you playing? Were you making NIL money at that point?
No, we didn't. Okay. It was just scholarship money.
Got
so we get paid every month, and we just save a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. So that money eventually ended up flying fast. But I would say for sure for real estate, you at least need 6 months of inventory of you making $0. Mm. That's what you need to save up for.
Got you.
Just expect you making $0 for the next 6 months. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that, then get into it.
Got you. Damn, bro. And so you have like a little bit of money and real estate, obviously, I mean, you're definitely selling houses, but how does go to the basics? Like how does a real estate agent get paid? You get paid off a commission for the houses you sell.
Yeah. Okay. I do the basics is helping a seller sell their house and helping a buyer find their house.
Gotcha.
That's the basics. I mean, doing all of that and how you get paid off of it. Percentages vary, but it's usually anywhere from 2% to 3% of the sales price you'll get paid. So if you sell, let's say, $100,000 house, just to make it easy, well, it's 2% of $100,000. Well, that's $2,000. I hope that is. But yeah, like, and the same thing, 3%, $3,000. Now, if you sell $1 million home, well, what's 3% of that?
Yeah, that's exactly. About
$30,000. Mm-hmm. So like, it goes up. It's just off of percentages, but
yeah, and so. What's normally, is there an easier route? Like the, you helping find a house for, you helping a buyer buy a house, or are you having a seller house? Is there like an easier one, or is it, they're both like kind of, like the same in your
eyes? I think it depends on the market.
Yeah.
If the market's slow, well, obviously the buyers, I do a lot of buyers. Mm-hmm. That's who I do. So buyers are kind of the easiest ones because this market hasn't been the best market since I've been in real estate.
Yeah.
So finding buyers a house, it's a lot easier because sellers are, they're not getting many offers. So if I place an offer, I may get it just off the first offer. No counter, no nothing like that. Now, having sellers, it's a little bit more work right now. And it's just, you know, you list a house up there, it may sit for 30, 60, 90 days, no offer, just because interest rates suck. You know, you had all this thing going on with the election, so buyers were maybe just a little concerned on what was going to happen. But then also closing costs as well. Prices have went up. So, you know, how is someone going to pay, you know, $3,000 for a monthly mortgage, but then also have to put down $10,000 for closing costs? It's all a numbers game.
Yeah.
But I will say that...
Were you good at numbers? Like, were you good at math growing up?
Hell no, I sucked at math. I don't do no algebra. I don't do any of that shit. I do regular times tables. I was great at times tables. You know, you do the 5 times 5. Yeah. Yeah, I could do all that. But that's really all you need. I mean, just knowing your addition, subtraction, multiplication, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. So. And so do you remember like your first like house you sold?
You know it's crazy. One of the first houses I sold, and if it wasn't the first house, was Dickie.
Really?
Yeah, it was a house to Dickie and Anthony, and that was funny. I was terrible back
then.
You help
them sell it, or you help them buy
it? No, I helped them buy it, and I was terrible. So I don't even know how, like, why they even used me, but that was cool. I was really I was I actually really appreciated that because I was very new and they still used me. So mm-hmm. that was a really cool thing. But I will say, yeah, I sucked.
And are you like independent now? Are you like on your own?
Yeah, I'm 100% by myself. I don't think I'll ever join a group. But then again, I won't ever cross that out because if the opportunity does come and present itself and it looks great, then yeah, we'll join a group again. But for the most part, I like doing my own thing. I have my own goals. I have my own ambitions. And then, I mean, just getting into the flipping game as well is, that's also just something I do by myself, and I want to bring in my siblings, my family into it. You know, Jeremiah is an investor, especially when he starts making the big money, they get played pretty good. So I say,
hey, bro. Yeah, I was going to say, he's making some like, just college athletes now in general, they're making some serious bread.
No? Yeah, he makes some good bread. So that's why I told him, I say, hey bro, we're going to have a sit down, you know, after this year, and talk about really investing and getting into maybe grabbing a property or two and partnering up,
yeah,
or maybe even holding it. So, but yeah, now it's, I got into more complex real estate, you know, not just the buying and selling. I like it, but mm-hmm. I think my true passion is me actually buying the houses.
Yeah.
So
damn. So buying them. So when did you buy your first place? It was like this past year. No,
the first one I bought was last year, but it wasn't, it was more of a 50-50 partnership. The one I bought by myself was that
the Hacienda,
big old narco yeah. home. That one is cool, but that one was a very, very uncomfortable. But I'm very, and I tell this to about, I mean, my girlfriend, my siblings, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Well, you're never gonna progress. I don't care how smart people say they. Oh, I don't have to be. You have to be uncomfortable, bro. Because mm-hmm. that's what motivates you and oh shoot, I gotta get up. I gotta do this. I gotta do. If you're comfortable, you're just gonna lay in bed watch Netflix. Okay. Like, so that is my whole thing. Is with that big house, I was like, man, Tristan, it's either you go big or you go home. Like, this is gonna change everything, and it changed a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, me flipping that house, I had no partners at all. I made the entire spread. That one was a really big, and I was sold it in one day, you over asking. Yeah, it was a crazy awakening. I don't want to say a rude awakening because I knew I had it in me, but I didn't know it was gonna go. I mean, I was losing hair. I felt, but bro, yeah, I would say for the flipping and getting into that.
What's the stressful part for you about it? Like, what was the most stressful part?
The money.
Yeah,
that is. I mean, you're paying. I was living at Montecillo. And that shit's not cheap. Yeah. So that was digging in my pocket. Then I had my cars that I was renting out too, but I stopped renting them out for a bit because I was just overwhelmed with my flips. I was paying all three of those cars. And then I had that big old house over there I was paying on. Mm-hmm. So the first of the month, I was, don't even talk to me. I was so damn mad. I was just like, don't even bother texting me with bad news. If you have bad news, save it for next week.
And it was just all the renovations as well, right?
Yeah, just took time. I mean, that house took 7 months to renovate. Damn. So, yeah, throwing in the money and then also paying the loan on it and then everything else, your whole life that you got to pay for, it was stacking up. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, Tristan, if I don't come up on this, I'm going to be down forever. So.
Yeah, and it was a nice little come up, though.
Yeah, that one was definitely the step I needed to take it to the next level. So that one was, and I had a lot of people in my ear saying, don't do it. It's a bad investment. It's yes, this and that. But I truly think, I mean, if you haven't done it or you've done it and failed, your opinion to me, I'm really not going to take it. Mm. That's just my, and it may come off as arrogant but I just feel like, well, if you haven't done what I've done, or if you've tried it and you failed, of course you're going to have a very pessimistic mm-hmm. opinion to it. So, I mean, same thing with the cars. When I'd rent out my cars, they're like, oh, Tristan, are you sure you're going to do this? And even, you know, people in my family would say like, oh, you're going to sure. And I was like, why you guys keep questioning on everything I'm going to do? Like, yeah, I've done more research than you guys have done on it. So I'm pretty sure I think I know.
Yeah.
But, and I know it comes from a genuine, you know, part of them that just worries about me. But it's just more like, oh, I think I'm a little bit more educated on it. So that's the only thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, bro, it's been, I think, like I said, the buying, selling, that's the basics. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But getting into actually acquiring real estate and not burning bridges and not being terrible people, that's what I'm trying to do. And I have something very big coming.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's nothing to talk about now, but I am looking for something very big to buy. So.
Hell yeah. And do you, like, when you buy houses, like, obviously, and so where does your network come from? Like, people going to you? Is it just, like, a lot of it's word of mouth? Obviously, you post on social media as well. But, like, where are these clients coming from, and how are you getting more clients, you know?
Yeesh. So, I can't spill all the tea on how I get my clients. Yes. But I will say this. The majority of my traditional clients are from referrals. So, my friends, family members, and then social media. Mm. I used to prospect a lot, called, hit the phone, every that. I probably haven't hit the phone in, like, a year. Like I haven't even prospected. Everything I do is social media and then referrals.
Wow. Okay.
Because if I'm hitting the phone, it's to buy my houses. Like, gotcha. Those are the only ones I'm prospecting for. Mm-hmm. So,
and how are you finding, like, houses to sell to these buyers? Like, are you working with it's like a brokerage, right? Or how does it work? Okay.
So you have a whole database full of all these houses. Mm. And I mean, let's say Diego's looking for, oh, I want a 3-bedroom, 2-bath on the Northeast. Psh, I just filter it, 3-bed, 2-bath. I email it to you.
Got you.
I mean, that's how you'll see every Northeast house on that's a 3-bed, 2-bath over there.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Once you become like an official real estate agent, you have access to this. Like, not everybody has access to this.
Yeah.
Oh, commercial real estate. Have you looked into that, or is that a completely different ball game?
That is a completely different ball game, but that is something that has intrigued me so much.
Yeah.
And I know those commercial real estate agents are sharks. You probably call it, oh my goodness, if you call their number and just ask a dumb question, they're going to hang up on you. That's how bougie and high end they are. Like, so that's why I don't even call them, because I think I know a lot until you really talk to someone that knows a lot. Yeah. So that's why with them, I just try to pick everyone's mind, everyone, OG, everything. And, you know, whether they sell or not, they have experience. So that is my biggest thing with some of these commercial agents, with some of these big time residential agents, with even just regular, you know, residential agents. I pick and I'm just saying, you'll learn something from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you outperform them in everything, there is still something to learn from them,
for sure.
So that is the whole thing with them. Is I will say I am coming to commercial very soon though.
Hell yeah. Is that so? That's next up on your list. What else is, like, down the pipeline for you, would you say? Like, what are you looking forward to? Obviously you're looking more into the flipping aspect of the business. What are some other things, like, maybe you're excited for coming up?
I am very interested in the beauty industry. Bro, I kind of get mad at spending $40 for a haircut. And I get my haircut every 3-4 weeks. These girls are coming in and spending $100, $150 every week. And I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's funding them?
Yeah, yeah.
So that is something I am eyeing, which is why I said commercial. I'm not looking for something to be a commercial agent. I'm looking for something to buy commercial. Mm. And that is my biggest, I mean, my inner circle knows. But for I will say, I do want to bring something. I do want to be the owner of the building. I don't want to do these leases. And I mean, nothing wrong with the leases, but if you dictate rents,
mm-hmm.
it's a little better.
For sure. Yeah. How'd you and Kimmy meet?
Through social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. She actually shot her shot first.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. That's so fire.
Yeah, she slid in my DM.
It's good being on the other side, you know?
Yeah. That was a very rare instance that ever happened. Usually guys shoot their shots. But
yeah. How long have y'all been together?
We've been together. We're about to hit 3 years in April.
Damn, three years.
Yeah. We talked for about 9-10 months just because, you know, I didn't know if I want a relationship. But yeah, we're about to hit 3 years officially in April. So it's mm-hmm. been we've had our ups and downs, and we've grown together, and we've learned so much about each other. And I've seen her grow, her and her business, and her as a person. And it's been she has some very big things coming too. And I think
what does she do?
She's an esthetician, so gotcha. She has her own business. She does facials, lashes, and, you know, she has her suite. She's about to upgrade to a bigger suite to get some girls in there. So some training, some just gotta figure out, you know, who else we're gonna bring in. She has someone in there as well already, but yeah, so it's been really cool learning about this.
Yeah, that's badass, bro. And you guys, I mean, I'm sure you guys have aspirations of doing business. I mean, if you're not already doing business with each other, no.
Yeah, and my whole goal is Kim has so much potential. I look at her and I'm just like, man, like, and it's just more, I think we're complete polar opposites. That's why we were very, very, I mean, we mesh so well together. I'm very structured and very, you know, calculated. And she's very, she just has some brilliant ideas that just throw me off, but they work so well. Mm-hmm. She stages my houses that I flip.
Okay.
And though, and that I feel is a game changer, because I would have never staged them shits like how she did.
Staging meaning like you're setting like the
furniture, everything. Yeah. Okay. She does all that. It does run a little bit more money, but I do make more on the end.
For sure.
On the back end. So she just brings some very interesting perspectives and ideas, and is a very genuine person. And I'm very blunt. And I really don't care. So like, if I hurt your feelings, I hurt your feelings. But she's very, you know, no, Tristan, you got to think about this, this, this. And I'm like, what? But it works. Yeah. So in,
let me ask you this. Like you said, like you guys were talking for a little bit, cause like you weren't sure if you were like kind of ready, you know, what do you think, was like it for you when it was like, no, like this is the person I do want to like, you know, build something with, you know, cause I'm curious for that as well.
So I talked to her for about 9 months. Her family is full of women, and I was hit with the ultimatum. Nothing. No love story, no Cinderella story. It was just hit with, hey, we're either going to go out, or we're going to be boyfriend and girlfriend, or this is a no-go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure the women were in her head. That's why I just like, ah, shit, okay.
Fuck it.
But that was, ultimatum.
Got you. Hell yeah. But just like kind of wrapping things up, what do you feel like, when you think about like, do you think about legacy at all? Like, is it something you think about?
Legacy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say no crazy thing like Mike Tyson said.
Yeah, but, yeah, for sure.
But I would say, like, legacy, I haven't really thought much about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've just thought of, like, you know, and I think if everybody thinks of how many people you have touched while you were here.
Mm-hmm.
Me, personally, and I hope it doesn't come off wrong, I genuinely am only worried about my circle,
mm-hmm.
my family. And I tell people also all the time, shit hits the fan, who you calling?
Mm.
And when the election was going on, I said, shit hits the fan, you're not going to call your friend and check up. You're going to call your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister. Those are the people that I sit there, and then maybe your closest friends. But my biggest thing is I sit there and I say, if I can make sure that my siblings and my parents get a better life before, you know, after, before, you know, how would I word it? If I can make sure that my siblings and my parents' lives are better while I'm here, that I'm actually doing something, not just because I'm making them smile, but financially, emotionally, physically, logically, you know, mentally, everything like that. If I can make sure and I can upgrade them and they can upgrade me and they can teach me, like, you know, teach me how to be genuine, how to, you know, to just think in all different type of aspects, I feel like my job is done. If I can see Jeremiah go to the league, cash out, play his couple years there, own some real estate, and I can see my sister come, you know, start her business, maybe, you know, work with Kim or work with Jeremiah, and then Elijah go to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I helped out with that foundation, and then, you know, get my dad a nice house, get it all paid off, my mom, I'm fine. I really am not an ambitious person to where, oh, I'm going to start this huge and go to Dallas and go to, some people are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. But I truly think all of that dies when you die.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, you're gonna pass it down, but I'll let them. Elijah may be the most ambitious, so he has some demons with him.
Yeah, that's beautiful, bro. That's amazing. And so just leaving off, if there's advice you would give to someone who's kind of like, let's just say they're in your position where maybe you're kind of struggling of kind of in terms like, oh snap, like maybe the league is not the path I'm going down. I kind of have to find something different. But you're kind of in a dark place for a little bit. And then there's also other people that kind of like going through similar things, or maybe they just are just struggling with whatever it is right now. Like, what's advice you'd give to them? right now, you know?
When I was struggling in, it was such a dark time my freshman year in college. I mean, great ups, great downs. But I remember I posted something that still stuck with me. Oh, since I don't even know how I found that quote. But it said, doubt kills more dreams than failure ever will. And you sit there and you're just like, okay, well, you know, what is it that's keeping you from taking the next step or from adjusting or adapting or getting yourself out of that, you know, whatever it is, that negative environment, maybe people that you're around. You don't know what it is, but I've always said that. And I said, man, like, there's so many people doubting every move I would make with football and also, you know, in real estate, in anything in the business. And I sat there, I was just like, Tristan, what do you have to lose? You're 20, I'm 27 right now. I sit there, I'm just like, I'm pretty sure if I fail and I bounce back at 29, everyone will forget. Now, if I'm like 60, well, but I don't know. But I would say that is probably one of the biggest things. I think a lot of people get worked up. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but he says, you know, the making a quick decision is a skill. Knowing when to seize that opportunity, oh, it comes and goes. That opportunity is there for maybe a day, a couple hours, a couple minutes. And if you don't take it, you're never going to see it again. And that has been something with me in life that I've done. I've done it now. I'm very, very, you know, if I make a decision, I've done all my research thoroughly, and I know. I'm not going to make a, you know, a decision and not know anything about it. So, yeah, I just want to say, you know, for people that may be going through some things, maybe things didn't play out the way you want, you know, no more excuses. No more excuses. Let's get over the excuses. I hate when I hear people make excuses. You will never hear an excuse come out of my mouth other than freaking, you know, pro day and all that. But other than that, like, for the, you will never, I will always, if a deal flops, if something happens, there's always something you could have done better to make sure the deal went through. So that's just my entire look on everything right now.
Hell yeah. Well, that is episode number 59 with Tristan Cooper. Really appreciate you making the time, man. Super great combo, bro. Got a lot of fucking jams, bro. You have a very dope perspective and love to see what you're doing, bro. It's amazing. And I wish you all nothing but success, your family, everything, bro. So it was a pleasure, bro. Appreciate you.
I appreciate it, bro. If you guys ever want to hop into the off markets, feel free. I know maybe you and Curry may be a little interested in how these go.
No, for sure. We're going to have to sit down. We're going to have to sit down one of these days.
This would be dope, bro.
Yes, sir. Hell yeah. Well, we'll see y'all next time.
Peace.